Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that's ego is way too big to say thank you to someone else. It's Sif Pop. Welcome to Sif Pop Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Woo, flash.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he just arrived in an Uber exec. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
I got that money to spend. Ahoy!
Each week, we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. He thinks the Windbreakers should have traded Lutz years ago for some draft picks. It's John Negroni, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, your puns are going to make me cry like a water element.
You're welcome. You're all very, very welcome. And John, you are welcome. Welcome back. It's good to see you. You're always my first reach out when I know we're talking Pixar. It is definitely an obsession that we have shared over the years. So how are things going?
That's true. Some would say our obsession with Pixar is a little unhealthy, but and they're right. It's good. I haven't seen Andrew in a while because he wasn't here for Lightyear.
That's right. I remember that. Last year, right before Lightyear, Andrew messaged me and said, I really don't want to talk to John.
John's going to be on the show?
Yeah.
What?
He tricked me this week.
Yeah, I just didn't let him know.
Yeah, he said it was going to be John Paula.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what it was. Well, we are glad to have you back, and it is always fun to talk movies with you, Pixar or not. It's always good to hear your opinions. By the way, John, a great follow on Twitter. Always enjoy seeing what's going on over there in your world. So that's at John Negroni if you want to check that
out.
That's
a nice way to put it, Aaron. I can almost see you like seeing some of my tweets and being like, wow. There he is.
Really? Is that what you think?
I don't know. Well, you know, I just thought of this a few minutes ago, but it's actually been 5 years since the first time I was on Sif Pop. A little bit of an anniversary because it was June 2018. Yeah. We talked Incredibles 2.
Yes. Incredibles 2 was the first time you were on. How's Incredibles 2 holding up for you in, you know, 5 years later? How do you still feel pretty much the same about it, or...
I still like it. You know, I actually just did a little Pixar ranking, you know, on the Letterboxd website. And it's not like high up the list, you know, but like none of the movies on there, I think, are bad except for Cars 2. So they're all just, you know, that part of the list is all just a mix of like movies that I think are watchable and fun.
Are you a fellow Good Dinosaur apologist? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought we shared that. Yeah. Yeah.
Quite so. More Andrew, rewatchable than minority. People, I think, assume.
What's that, John?
I think Good Dinosaur is actually pretty rewatchable.
Yeah.
You know, every time I rewatch the movies and I go back to it, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm settling in for this. But I know that most people are like Andrew, anti-believers.
That's right.
Hey, I love that for you guys. I love that for you.
Good is right in the title. How could it be anything else? I mean, it's just, you know, good night, good luck. Listening. Like, if you put good in the title, you're all set.
I'll have to remember that for my graphic
Andrew's
novel.
Racking his brain for a bad good title. Maybe we'll get there.
Andrew's
no, because
like,
the first thing that came up was
teachers.
The good, the bad, and the ugly, and that's the best movie ever made.
Yeah, there you see. So, there
no, you
go.
What about the Bad Moms Christmas movie?
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's just undefeated.
We are going to have some fun talking about movies. We're going to talk a little bit about The Flash, which is in theaters, and then some Pixar. Elemental is out this week as well. We are kind of hitting the glut of the summer. It's interesting. The Blackening just, I can't remember if it was this week, but that just came out. That's getting some fun buzz. Yeah. There was Extraction 2 on Netflix that came out this week that we'll probably talk about on a later show. And I think even Asteroid City was in preview, like some early release previews this week too. So it was a crazy week.
It's unlimited.
Yeah.
And I think Past Lives is opening this week and next week to more theaters too.
Yeah. So, lots of stuff. We'll hit a couple of them for you. Then we're going to do a best ever challenge, best ever actor comeback movies, where an actor came back after more than a decade to reprise a role. So we'll count down those. And of course, we'll do some buried treasure as well. But let's get right into it. Let's talk a little bit about The Flash.
So you're saying you could travel back in time?
Bruce, I can fix things. I can save people. I can save my mom. I can save your parents.
You can also destroy everything.
Love you, Pop.
I love you too.
So how was it this week? How's school?
School was good. Oh, shit.
This is mad trippy. Dude, this is catastrophic.
When his attempt to save his family inadvertently alters the future, Barry Allen becomes trapped in a reality in which General Zod has returned and there are no superheroes to turn to. In order to save the world that he is in and return to the future that he knows, Barry's only hope is to race for his life. But will making the ultimate sacrifice be enough to reset his universe? What do we think? Did you like it? Love it, dislike it, hate it? Or it was just okay? John, let's start with you.
Sure. I disliked it. Not high side of dislike, not low side. It's just a plain dislike.
Just dislike this movie. Andrew.
Yeah. High highs and low lows. So I'm just going to go with a solid liked it. Didn't really like it. Didn't kind of like it, just liked it.
You guys are just both playing the middle of your categories. I love it. Mm-hmm. I guess it's up to me then not to play the middle of the category. I'm going to go on the low side of liked it. I did have a good time with this movie, if nothing else. But Andrew, since you were in the middle of liked it, you liked it a little more than me. So tell us about the best movie of the year, The Flash.
It's a really fascinating entry into the superhero franchise because I think it tries to do stuff that no other superhero movie has done before. I'm not saying it succeeds. I'm definitely not saying this movie succeeds at everything it attempts, but you got to give credit where credit is due for a director really just swinging for the fences. And I think that Muschietti really is trying to make a grand, grand movie here. It doesn't work all the time, but there are some moments. And actually, I think the moments where I didn't expect it to hit as well as it did, like the emotional stuff, really worked for me. Like the stuff between Barry Allen and his mother almost kind of, you know, brought a little bit of a tear to my eye. I'm not going to lie. It was some pretty emotional stuff. Ezra Miller, quick question in favor I'm asking of you guys. Is it possible we can talk about this movie without talking about the Ezra Miller controversies?
Well, like I mean, we can do what we generally do, which is to say we are here to review a movie. We can mention other things that go on around the movie. That's fine. But there is ultimate grace in this environment to, you know, not have to have an opinion on everything or at least mention everything within the review. So yeah, no, that's fine. You don't have to go into that at all. I would also ask for grace in case I'm going to try to be very careful about not misgendering Ezra because I know they go by they, them. And I want to make sure that I do that. But also I know that I am human and that I might accidentally do that. So I appreciate that grace to exist in the real world. So yeah, but is that what you mean? Like, just not to have to like judge the movie by that conversation or the controversy? Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly, yeah. And also I think that everybody who is going to see this movie most likely either already knows about it or they don't know about it and they really don't care. They just wanted to see a superhero movie.
It's certainly been in the cultural consciousness for a while. Like, it's not new information. That is certainly true. Yeah. Right. That's fair.
We shouldn't discount that it can be very distracting.
Of course.
Depending on how much you know about the situation, you know? So, like, right. I don't blame anyone who's kind of coming at the movie being like, how am I supposed to, like, all they can think about is, like, all the real life stuff happening behind the scenes. And, yeah, that's going to be reality for some people who watch this.
I have always been one who doesn't mind having the open conversation. That's always to me going to be more beneficial than not having the conversation. And there really is, especially as we continue to have less and less privacy and more knowledge about people that we see on big screens and call heroes, there is more and more conversation about how they live their lives, the choices that they make, and if they do something that contradicts with our view of morality and what is right and what is wrong, how does that impact our ability to process them as a piece, not the whole, a piece of an entertainment product? Now, granted, a very front-facing piece, and I do think that matters, but a piece of the whole product. I think it's a valuable conversation to have, and I don't know that I'm afraid of having it. I just don't. I think you're right that it's not necessary for anybody who's on the show to have an opinion on that to have an opinion on the movie, if that makes sense, or to state an opinion on that, I should say.
Certainly, I think what I was really trying to get at is I don't want every single time I say Ezra Miller was really, really good in this movie to have a preface, saying,
I'm separating
a character from the actor.
I just watched Quantumania again for the first time since news has come out about things and stuff in people. And it was hard. It was difficult. Like, it impacts the way we see things. It really does. But yes, I hope, Andrew, that you feel comfortable enough to know that the audience will give you the grace to praise a performance without feeling like that means you're praising the human being giving the performance and all the choices that they make.
It's that, and also a fear that the show would turn into a gossip column.
Sure. You know? No, I'm totally with you there. Totally
too
with you.
Too late.
too late. Yeah. What have I said us now? All that to say, all of that entire last 5 minutes is all an attempt for me to say, man, Ezra Miller is good in this movie. He is really good, in my opinion. Like, portraying or like the acting ability that he's showing is not easy to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know how far we want to get into that with spoilers.
It's so difficult for me anymore to know what is a spoiler and what isn't. I am always flabbergasted by what's in the trailer when I see it because. Like, usually the first time is live on the show. So I'm just watching the Flash trailer for the first time. It was playing kind of over some of our stuff. And I knew in my heart of hearts, because of conversation, that the Michael Keaton thing wasn't being considered a spoiler, that it was, everybody knew that he was in the movie. But I also knew in my heart of hearts that how much better is this movie if you don't know? Like, I just, it's one of those things that just gets me every single time where I'm just like, and I always go back to the M. Night movie, Split, right? I always go back to that last scene in Split and how
somehow
he kept that secret, right? And I'm just like,
yeah.
The fact, but probably because it was self-financed and he had a lot of say in it or whatever. But like, if you can keep the secrets, they can be so much fun. Anyways, that's kind of a sidebar. But I think Ezra's doing really good work here for a couple of reasons. One is I think they're talented. I think that the performance on both sides of what he's doing, I'll just say that, whether it's a spoiler or not, are interesting, distinct, and purposeful. And that gets me to my second part of the performance, which I think is more of a writing thing than a performance thing. I think the idea of how crisis events in our life literally change us is portrayed really, really well in that performance. And it would be easy to say part of this performance, the duality of this performance, is shallow and basic, but it's not. It is unrefined. There hasn't been a refining to that that character in a way, so it works. And I'm with you. I think the performance was really well, both for the writing and for what Ezra was doing in the duality of that role. So yeah, I agree with you there about the performance.
Yep. John, any pros? I know you're not the biggest fan of the movie, but anything about it you liked?
Well, I do agree to some extent that I certainly wasn't watching the movie constantly thinking about the Ezra Miller of it all. Mm-hmm. I did get sucked in. I was seeing Barry Allen, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes mm-hmm. plural. And I was able to just kind of sit with the movie. I think the best parts of this movie for me are the opening, the cold open, where we're just kind of getting into this world a little bit, and we're kind of hanging out with Barry Allen, and they're, to me, glimmers of just a really like solid, comfortable, confident comic book hero movie that clearly I think is what Andy Muschietti wanted to make. And then I actually think the last like 10 minutes of this movie, I was kind of into its groove. And it took a while, but I got there. There is like a reveal at the very, very end that I was like, okay, that's actually fun. That's kind of what I'm coming here mm-hmm. hoping to see, because I went into this with kind of rock bottom expectations, to be honest, in terms of just hard for me to watch movies when I know in the back of my head that they're kind of just changing everything behind the scenes and this might not really mm-hmm. matter. But then I remind myself, none of this matters anyway. It's fine. You know? Right. There's almost something kind yeah. of exciting, right? You could watch it without that baggage and be like, they'll probably not continue this. We'll probably never see Ezra Miller as the Flash again. So that means they can do anything they want with this. And, you know, that's almost to the detriment of the movie if you're expecting it to be this kind of big reset or anything like that. I won't give it away, but, you know, obviously, you know, come into the movie with your own sort of expectations and manage them, and I can certainly see why it's appealing to people, because it does hit a lot of those like comic book grooves that I think Hollywood kind of has to a science at this point, even if it's by osmosis because of Marvel.
I want to jump off that a little bit to say, kind of expand on what you're talking about with expectations, because this was not the movie I expected. This was very, very far from the movie I expected. And maybe it's the marvel of the world of it all, where, again, recently watching Quantumania, that movie is an excuse to world build the franchise. It is not like that movie is not an Ant-Man movie. That movie is a MCU movie. And I expected this to be a big piece in the move, right, to whatever's next. And it's not. It's a very, I think, fairly contained Flash story, which I was not expecting, and actually kind of appreciated, because it felt, of all the multiverse stuff we're seeing, this to me felt the most contained and had a few more guardrails, which can be a pro and a con in some ways than other of the recent multiverse movies. I actually appreciated about that. But I think it's fair to say that it is not the movie I expected. And if you're expecting Flashpoint to, you know, be this kind of thing that moves the needle forward, it doesn't really do that. It doesn't really move the needle forward.
To your point, it cares more about the past than it does the future.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Really moved by how much it cares about its central character. It cares about Barry Allen. This movie really cares about Barry Allen and really understanding who he is and what that means. So, yeah.
I think that whenever people hear like the premise for the story of Flashpoint, that they think that it's going to be, you know, this grand telling of the entire DC universe, mm-hmm. this Elseworld of, you know, a different Batman, a different Joker, a different Superman, all this mm-hmm. kind of stuff. But then whenever they read it, they realize, oh, this is a Barry Allen story. Mm-hmm. It's not this great Justice League, you know, crazy adventure. This is a story about Barry Allen and the hardships that he went through. Like, if you had the tools, would you say to hell with the risks and try and, you know, try and do what you think is right as opposed to, you know, letting go and accepting fate? It's a very interesting story.
Well, it's worth mentioning we just saw this story, this theme. Like, I mean, to the letter, we saw this theme in Spider-Verse a week ago. You know what I mean? Like, or 2 weeks ago or whenever.
I'll save my commentary on that for the negatives. I do have another positive, though, if we're talking about...
Yeah, go for it.
Performances, too. I think Maribel Verdú, like, whoa, the legend, you know, playing... Mm-hmm. Barry's mother, I mean, wonderful to see her on screen again. I don't think I've seen her on the big screen since maybe Pan's Labyrinth. I actually don't remember if I have. And yeah, she's like terrific. Like, she shows up, I think, for a totally different movie in some respects, you know, because she's just but such she's capital A actor.
She locks in the emotion that we're talking about, though. Mm-hmm. Like, so much Seriously. Of why that works is her performance. It's really, really good. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also Sasha Calle, I thought that she was I'm a little bummed, you know, the movie they kind of had in mind for her, not Batgirl, that was what they were going to do with Michael Keaton. There was another movie I think they had in the wings for her that got canceled or it's not going to happen, and I'll be pretty sad if we don't get to see her in that role again, because I actually thought there was something to that.
Yeah,
it kind of feels spoilerish. It feels like wasted potential. Like you see a spark for this new character that we haven't seen on the big screen before, and for a lot of people, they're like, "Ooh, I want to know more about that character." And again, that's not what this movie is interested in telling. This movie is interested in telling a story about Barry with a lot of side characters.
Mm-hmm. Mainly
Keaton.
Once,
mainly Keaton
in the '80s, though.
Was that
we've seen Supergirl on the big screen?
Oh, fair point. Yeah, a long, long time ago. But well, for most people,
some people saw it. Yeah. The modern movie going audience probably. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a whole show on television as
that,
well.
That's right.
We don't need to talk about that show.
She was great in that. Was it Melissa Benoist? I think was
Melissa Benoist.
Was great in that.
Grant Gustin, I was in the back of my head was thinking, like, if they redo like a Flash thing, I mean, that guy, they should have his number. I mean, well, I know he did like a connectivity thing with Ezra Miller once in the show,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
for like 10 seconds
yes.
or something.
Yeah, the show played in that world. I will say, I don't care if this is spoiler. I'm just saying it to save you the disappointment that I had. I was bummed that Grant Gustin didn't show up in this movie.
I was too.
I was really bummed. We from the beginning have been on the Grant Gustin should have remained the Flash train. And that's not to take away from Ezra's performance. It is just to say I think Grant is a great Flash.
Is that good?
I think he brings pathos that Ezra can't quite get to, but Ezra brings a comedy that Grant doesn't quite get to. So they do have their pros and cons, for sure. All right, other things. Anything you guys want to talk about? Pros, cons, whatever. What's next?
Do we want to talk about the Keaton element?
Sure. Did you like it? Did you like the Batman stuff? There's a ton of Batman stuff. If it's not a Flash movie, it's a Batman movie.
Yeah. And you know me, Batman is my jam. So, mm-hmm. And it's Michael Keaton. I thought he was really good. I really did. I thought that his delivery of the character, I think that he just fell right back into that role. I think that this movie shows a human element to his character that I never really appreciated as much. I'm one of the very few people who wasn't a fan of Michael Keaton's Bruce Wayne, you know, like whenever mm-hmm. he was Bruce Wayne. I know that's what a lot of people love him for. I think that Christian Bale was the best Bruce Wayne, but man, I think that Keaton, he got his number on. He got my number with this one.
Yeah, yeah. I thought Keaton was great in this. I will say, my eyes rolled their hardest at a few of his lines. He definitely has.
If we want to talk about the camp and cheesiness of this movie,
he definitely has a couple say the line, Bart, moments in this, and they're horrible. They are horrible. Can I just say that they're horrible? I hate that they're in there. It's just such pointless fan service. I don't mind fan service, but I need it to mean something. I need it to feel more authentic than. I mean, he might as well have winked at the camera. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's
he looked at the, he was looking at the camera when he said those lines.
Yeah, but I don't think he was technically meaning to break the fourth wall. I don't think that was the point. But I mean, it feels like it. Like some fan service breaks the fourth wall too hard, and I think that happens in this movie a couple times. So yeah,
you want to get cheesy? Let's get cheesy.
Yes, exactly. You honestly want for some me, cheese Keaton, with those nuts?
Keaton and it's like the Kiersey Clemons thing too. She plays Iris West, and I just think they're check boxes. Because that's the way that sums this whole movie up for me. Honestly, is that why is she in this movie? Well, because she's Iris West. Of course, she's in a Flash movie. Yeah. And that's about all the thought that they put into it, because when you actually like watch the movie, I mean, she really doesn't impact the plot. She doesn't really impact Barry. You know, there's more chemistry between Ezra Miller and Ezra Miller than Ezra Miller and Kiersey Clemons. Yeah. And I kind of feel similarly about Michael Keaton. I feel like it's just forced, and it bums me out because I want Michael Keaton to have that Batman return, that really, like, I want them to have their Spider-Man No Way Home moment. They're gonna rip it off, do it, why not? No one's stopping you. But doing it in a Flash movie, and especially the way they do it, because just all the multiverse implications they kind of try to bring about in this, I mean, aside from, I do think the way they visualize time travel, while the effects themselves are really off-putting to me, and really PS2 graphics going on there, just the concept of it is actually pretty cool,
the time bowl.
I was like, okay, that's a different way to show time travel. Let's do that. But I think, like, trying to cram the Michael Keaton Batman with like the cheesy costumes and the red logo into an Ezra Miller Flash continuity, it raises a lot of questions that I can't really get to without spoiling things. But it's just like those things just didn't mix. Like, seeing those characters on the poster and seeing them interact with each other, I assumed that he got like sent in from another multiverse, essentially, but nah, he's there. That's his world too. And there are just some strange things going on. I know we're already off the positives at this point, I guess, but you said anything. I do think the Aquaman joke involving why Aquaman isn't in this continuity, that did get a hearty chuckle from me.
Nice.
So I'll give it that.
Well, and that is something I would put in the positive column. And part of the reason I think I was entertained for most of this movie is I think it has a good sense of humor. I think this movie really does have a good sense of humor for the most part.
Oh, yeah. I laughed a lot.
They got a Daly and the Game Night guys. John Francis Daly, Jonathan Goldstein worked on the script with Christina Hodson.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. It's definitely a funny movie. So I was entertained. I think for my main negative, I know you said you started to feel the vibe towards the end of the movie, John. It lost me towards the end. The end to me was, in my mind, the worst execution of the idea of, hey, we're in the multiverse, let's play with all the toys. Like, it plays with all the... I think
John's talking about after that.
Are you talking about after that?
Yeah. Well, I'll say this much, because, again, I don't want to give too many things away, but the ending, like, when the point and the message of the movie really starts to crystallize...
Sure, yes.
Like, we wrap up not just the second act, but we're kind of like right past the climax. That saved the movie for me.
Yes.
Like, saved it, because I was so checked out. Also, real quick, I love that someone commented that Grant Gustin should have played the other Flash instead of Ezra playing both.
Oh.
Yes, 100%, 10 out of 10. You were correct. Thank you.
Yeah.
I would have loved that.
Yeah, so anyways, yes, I'm with you. After that stuff, there are some thematic emotional beats that I think do really bring home the message of the movie in, I think, a really powerful way. But the, hey, let's play with all our toys moment, I think is handled worse than any other multiverse. And this includes by the way, the Doctor Strange movie, which I didn't think handled its toys very well. I think it handled it better than this. And I just think it is, there's nothing other than nostalgia that they're trying to milk through those moments. And that's annoying to me. I liked the visuals. I just didn't like the ideas of, you know, oh, we're going to send the camera into this multiverse and these things are happening. And I don't know. It didn't work for me.
Reminded me of like Thor Love and Thunder, like the floating head kind of effect.
Yes.
A little bit funny.
I will say the CGI in this movie is really, really bad. Like it's bad. Especially whenever we live in an era where superhero movies are at their zenith, you know, like they're and this is a big movie too. It's not like a little indie house superhero movie. No, this is a giant studio who has put their money, like a lot of money into the budget for the CGI, and it does not deliver. There is some Gumby looking stuff, like the Batflex stuff. That's all like, it's unlike anything we've seen him. By the way, that's not spoilers. That's all in the trailers. That whole element is just wasted, I think. Like, it didn't feel like the Batfleck that we'd seen over the past couple movies.
He literally says, "Don't let your tragedy shape you. You're Batman." You're all about tragedy shaping you.
Yeah. What? In fairness, he does have a line where he says, "I'm not good at this." Like, he's at least self-aware to know that.
You know, don't be like me, kid.
Yeah, that's kind of how I took it. Like,
yeah.
This
but the
is
Michael
Keaton
Batman's just like, things worked out.
Yeah, that's another.
You should do it.
This can be my one last thing because I don't know that I have a ton more to say. So if you guys have anything else you want to get out there, start thinking about it now. But my one last thing is I think the Keaton stuff it becomes the movie for so much of the movie that when the movie finally goes, actually, it's not about that. You've already lived it being about that too much for it not to be about that. That is what's unfortunate about that is a couple of things. Number one, the thing that it's actually about is really interesting and beautiful and good. And number two, that Keaton stuff, and I don't mean his acting, those guys, I just mean the things that part of the movie was trying to accomplish doesn't mean anything. Means absolutely nothing because we know nothing about what it means. And the movie actually goes to great pains as we start to get to the end to really confuse us as to any of what it means or what's going on. So because the movie made it so much about that for so long, I think it really does diminish the movie's ability to land fully, at least with me. So I wanted to mention that. What about you guys? You guys have one last thing?
The most vital and important post-credit scene of any superhero movie ever. Ever! No, I mean, there is one, but what did you guys think?
Skippable.
The one at the very end?
Yeah.
It was dumb. Yeah. I mean, it was just, I mean, that's the only word I had for it. I was just like, what are we doing? Yeah.
You're going to do a gag, make it funny. I don't know.
My bladder's been exploding for the last 5 minutes of credits,
thank you.
And this is what I waited
for?
That's
why I was so mad. That's why I was so mad. I'm like, this is why I stayed. I gotta go!
My one last thing is that, again, with the Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, I think what really cinches it for me when comparing these two movies, it's hard not to. They're coming out so close to each other. But to me, Across the Spider-Verse was all about pushing back and questioning canon, comic book lore, fandom, our expectations in comic book movies. And there was this whole message in that movie of like, you know, you don't have to just fridge every character. Fridging is, you know, we've just been doing it this way for so long. And the Flash is so weird because it's kind of like wrapping itself in it. And
correct.
I think for like reasons that make sense. I mean, why wouldn't it? So many other movies do that kind of thing. I mean, there's one thing I did like about Deadpool 2 is that it kind of like subverted that a little bit. But this movie just, it's like, I don't know, it would be Team Miguel, I guess, in terms of of that movie. It's just hard to watch it because it's so obsessed with, you know, like sending home that message, even though it's a message with an element of truth that I like, I think that we can kind of get stuck in the past and we can kind of try to, like, you know, our headspaces go back in time. And, you know, if it's a trap to try to think like, oh, if I could relive this moment, blah, 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 when you should just kind of focus on what's coming next. I don't know. I think the way that this movie handles it is just so outdated, unfortunately. And it makes sense considering it's a movie that they've had in the, you know, in a production process for so many years now. And so it was kind of hard for me to like come out of this really like ready for more Flash stuff, even though it's like I've been wanting a Flash movie for so long, growing up on like Justice League, you know, the cartoons, and always loving the Flash character. And I should have been so stoked for this movie, you guys. I should have been like, when I got to the theater, like in my seat, nervous, giggling, you know, like it's Star Wars Force Awakens night. I couldn't have been less enthused. You know, I was just kind of sitting there scratching my chin. So, and I was after the movie too. Yeah, I'm glad people are liking it. Other people.
I don't know that it's too much of a pushback, but I would say that I think the two movies actually do have a slight difference in the approach to what they're saying. One is talking about the established past. One is talking about the established future. And those are two different things. And I actually think both movies kind of handle the philosophy of those things pretty well. Because the message of The Flash or what's going on there has a lot to do with changing the past, whereas Spider-Verse has a lot to do with there are things coming in your future that you can't change. And so I think that requires a shift in perspective because of the fact that we literally only exist in the moment we exist in. So I don't know if that's much of a pushback. I kind of agree with what you're saying, but I do think there is a slight distinction on what they're talking about and what they're
there
saying.
There is. So. I feel like we'd have to like really get into a spoiler space to really hash that out. But
for both movies.
Seriously.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
My one last thing is I think that there's going to be a really, for me anyway, a rewatchability element to this movie. To see how I feel on a second or even third viewing, because it's possible that this movie could go up or down in my estimations.
Sure, as always.
The first time you're watching it is rewatching it, or rewatching Man of Steel.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong, which plays in again to my why are we making so much of the movie about this? All right, let us move on to our second review. Let's talk about Pixar's Elemental.
Meet the residents of Element City. Air usually has their head in the clouds.
Oh, my new jacket!
Earth can be a little seedy.
Nothing weird going on here.
Just a little pruning.
Water is always getting into something.
Help!
And fire? As ordered, we run a little hot.
In a city where fire, water, land, and air, Avatar, residents live together, a fiery young woman and a go-with-the-flow guy will discover something elemental, how much they have in common. It is Pixar's Romeo and Juliet. Let's go. What did you guys think? Did you like it, love it, didn't like it, hated it, or it was just okay? Andrew, you start this time.
Loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Absolutely loved it. John, what about you?
Low side of liked it.
Okay, low side of liked it. And I'm on the low side of loved it. It's a Pixar movie, guys. I don't know what to tell you. Andrew, you actually seem to have loved it more than me. So tell me about all the things you loved about this movie.
Wow. I mean, two of the highest Pixar guys I know, not highest, but, you know, highest ranked Pixar guys I know, I feel kind of, you know, taken aback.
Here's your key and your robe.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I have been initiated. No, I'll go ahead and say.
We do.
Do we? Gobble, 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 gobble. One of us. I think that the thing that really allows me to just sink my teeth into this movie is the fact that there's an in for me, and that is the fact that I took over my family's business. So that there is an element to this movie that I was able to immediately, you know, connect with and, you know, find my emotional footing. And then everything else was just gravy. There's so much beautiful storytelling going on, I think, about metaphors about race relations, about immigration. This movie's basically just a New York City immigration metaphor, is what it felt like to me. Mm-hmm, like, sure. Elemental City feels so much like New York City to me. There's great characters. There's so many things to love about this movie.
Yeah. I would like to talk about the metaphor of this movie forever. I just want to talk about it forever. Because yeah. I find it really complex. I almost find it difficult to really find my footing with this metaphor, because I think it is mostly talking about culture and immigration and not necessarily wanting to go full out into racism and those kind of things. Do they interlock? Do they play together? Of course they do. But once you start to say, the fire people represent this race, the water people represent this race.
Oh, that's not what I was trying to say.
No, I know. I'm just saying the metaphor if you start to make it racial, that's what the metaphor wants you to do. And then it becomes really tricky, because then you're dealing with all sorts of racial stereotypes. And I mean, you're dealing with a society where people base every one of their names on their defining characteristic of difference to the other people, right? All the water people are Wade and, you know, whatever, and the fire people are Ember and whatever. And it's just like, it would be as if you want to take the racial angle, you know, I was named white guy and you were named Asian guy or whatever it might be. And it's just like, so you can't quite go into the racial metaphor of it without it getting really messy in my brain.
Ethnicity make that easier? Because it's less more about Irish,
correct. And that's where I'm talking about immigration and culture, and ethnicity is the perfect way to say that. Thank you, John. Yeah, the ethnicity part of it, I think, is a lot easier, because it's inescapable that that's what the movie is about. I mean, it's clear that the movie is talking about those things. But it was throughout the movie, I'm just like, oh, but if this is the metaphor, what are they saying in this scene? They're just like, I don't know that I like what they're saying in this scene, if that's the metaphor. Like, so it just got a little weird at a few points.
I don't know if this is what you mean, but specifically, yeah, there were moments in this movie where I was like, okay, so, you know, people should be more accepting of each other, and like, you know, interracial relationships, you know, I'm in an interracial relationship. Mm-hmm. I certainly connected with that. My parents, they're not immigrants because Puerto Rico is a territory, but they had an immigrant experience. Mm-hmm. They didn't know English when they moved here.
Right.
But there were times in this movie, though, where I was like, but, you know, this movie's kind of saying, like, don't be racist. Yeah, that's great. But also, it's inescapable that these characters kind of have, like, a reason for why they're not together.
Yes, that was exactly where I was going, John. Like, fire and water are physical opposites. That's not the case with racial issues. Like, you know what I mean? There are no physical reasons.
It does come together, though, at a certain point in the movie, where it is sort of saying, it's like, it's more of a fear-based thing, and like,
right,
human beings do have the capacity to hurt each other, harm each other, based on all kinds of things, but this movie sort of says, like, you shouldn't be so scared of, like, your fellow person. So I do think that they knew that that was going to be a thing, and then so they inserted some story material to kind of smooth that over. Whether or not it'll work for you, kind of, you know, miles will vary, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm an overthinker, and so that's just always going to come with its difficulties. But I think it handles it really well. I don't think that the themes or the metaphors or those kind of things in any way made me distracted from enjoying the movie or understanding what was going on. It's just my brain was going a mile a minute at times, being like, why, you know? So the cloud people play sports? You know, like that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like it's, I don't know. It's just like, what, you know, so this game, this sport, it's only for the cloud people. Like the other people's can't even play this because of the way it's played. Like, I don't know. It got weird for me at times trying, you know, my brain just kept plowing through stuff. So yeah. Anyways, continue, Andrew, with other things you enjoyed.
Well, like I alluded to earlier, I did take over my family's business So that was an easy in for me. And seeing, you know, the struggle of this character, Ember, of wanting to live up to not only the expectations of her family, but also the desire to make them proud, you know, it's a lot to put on somebody. And I want to make this very clear. My parents didn't force me to take over the company. I asked mm-hmm. to. This it was my choice and everything. But I can honestly see that this weight, this burden that is being put on Ember's shoulders it's a very real thing. And it just made her a very empathetic character, because it's not just that element of her. And I won't get into spoilers about like her character arc, because I do think that there are some major spoilers that we want to steer clear of in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I'll talk a little bit about some other things. One of the things I love is that if you're going to go into this ready to play the let me figure out who voices, who are the famous people that voice these characters game. Guess
not
what, buddy?
People.
Well, us Joe Pera super fans, we had a time and a half getting to listen to Joe Pera give his brilliant, perfect dulce tones as mm-hmm. one of the bureaucrat soil characters in this.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You may know Joe Pera. Yes, that's correct. I mean, you know Catherine O'Hara. She has a part in this. Wendy McClendon, you may know from
Leia
some
Lewis,
stuff.
She was in that movie. It was like a Netflix movie, The Other Half of Me or something like that. I forget the exact name. And Mamadou Atsi, I don't know how to pronounce his name correctly. I don't know his voice, but I do remember him from Jurassic World and like that Netflix mm-hmm. show. Also, Ronnie Del Carmen mm-hmm. voices a character, and I actually got to meet Ronnie years ago at Pixar because he was a story artist for Inside Out. So it's cool to see his name there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, cool guy.
That's cool.
And this is Peter Son's first time directing, second. Or did he also direct Lightyear?
No, he directed The Good Dinosaur, but he kind of took that over from Bob Peterson.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So maybe that's where I was getting confused. He was in... Yeah, like he was a voice actor for Lightyear, though, right?
Yeah, and Up as well.
Okay.
Or wait, no, he didn't voice a character in Up. They based the Russell character's like persona or like likeness on him, sort of.
Speaking of Up, are we going to talk about that?
The short?
Yeah.
No, I mean, we did you have some things you wanted to say?
It made me cry, and I wasn't a fan of that. I wasn't ready for that.
I don't know why I'm the big grump.
I got upped again.
I did not like the short at all.
I actually did. It's the first Pixar short I haven't liked. I watched it and I was just like, I am not connected.
I was like, when's the part that is interesting? I don't know. Andrew, other people have been saying like, I loved it. It made me cry. And I've been confused. I'm like, what's wrong with me?
Well, I'm with you. Apparently.
Well, at least I'm not alone then, because like, man's best friend, that element got to me, but whenever he's talking to the picture, you know, man, that slayed me.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, that hurt. In a good way. In a good way.
Yeah. So I did want to mention that I continue to appreciate Pixar's story-first approach in casting voices. I think that's really, really been a hallmark of how they have succeeded, and I'm glad that they continue to do that. And I thought the performances were great. I really enjoyed, I thought they were unique and fun and interesting, and really enjoyed them. I also think the visuals, as is to be expected, were amazing. Some of the fire effects I just thought were so beautiful, so gorgeous. There are many, many frames in this that I would put on my wall. It's just a lot of really, really pretty stuff. And it's not just pretty or funny, or it's all to serve a story purpose. And it often is very, you know, meaningful. The idea of the colors of the fire are part of the emotion, right? And it's part of the heat. Like fire is different color at different heats, and the way that that works and the way that that progresses. I found it to be really gorgeous. John, some thoughts. Give us some thoughts.
Yeah, I really want to bounce off the art style, because if there is one thing about this movie that works for me unequivocally, it is the art direction and just the general concept of this story. And there's so many like little moments when you actually see the elements kind of just interacting with their environments and with each other in ways that are, I don't know if they're scientifically accurate. I'm not a very sciencey person, but you know, at the very least, if a dumb person like me found them like very, you know, interesting and kind of compelling, of like, ooh, they're kind of using the fire to make glass in this instance, and all of that, I think, really works. And it's just nice to see a different style for Pixar movies in a way that we also saw with Luca. You know, that was one of the things I liked about Luca the most, mm-hmm. is those characters really felt like, you know, storybook, you know, art style characters. We weren't just sort of doing the, you know, kind of rounded, mainly kind of textures and everything. So I saw there was a lot of chatter from people being like, all Pixar movies look the same and be like Across the Spider-Verse. And that I just think that that's nonsense. You know, I think that Spider-Verse has a style that's so brilliant unto itself. And you cannot discount how good Pixar has been over the years, their attention to detail in the technicals. And so that's the main stuff I like about this movie. The things I don't like about this movie are, I find the romance a bit too cheesy. And I really just wanted the world to have a stronger part of the story. I really just didn't feel like the elements of the setting really mixed with the plight of the characters. It just was a little bit surface level to me. And a lot of that happens with, I think they avoid kind of having an out-and-out villain. And they sort of just kind of go for, it's like an environmental sort of thing. It's kind of just a fluke. And I think that kind of rubs against some other stuff in the movie, where I thought that they were trying to go for something a little bit more, I don't know, bold, and a little bit more of like, you know, what would this society really look like? And I thought it was interesting, because Aaron, you kind of counted it as a plus, where you were like, you know, you liked that it was a little bit more, maybe subtle is the right word, and how like people aren't just cartoonish villains, right? And I do like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it isn't trying to just make people a bunch of like, you know, bigoted, boring villains that, of course, they're bad.
There are a couple moments. There's some flashback moments where,
but it's nuanced.
It definitely gets, but it, overall, it is nuanced. And I think the environment actually for me was part of that nuance. It is very clear that this city was built by the water people. Like everything, like all the main, and so there's this real, I think, beautifully subtle idea that for the fire people, just they have to walk around every day in a society that is not built for them.
So that's sort of what I mean. That is actually really interesting to me. What disappointed me was that didn't factor into really the plot, and like how the character is having to kind of reckon with that was just sort of glossed over, and it felt like they were solving it with love. Instead of like really building up to a point where Wade can kind of understand, for example, the privilege that he has in a city like this. But he's just such a perfect, nice guy.
I think I think the family scene is meant to be the wet privilege scene. I think the family scene like is meant to be.
I don't want to say too much.
Did you just call it the wet privilege?
Yes, I'm sorry. I think that is the, yes, that scene to me is the scene where, you know, I don't know that any of Wade's family actually deals with understanding it much, but I think that's kind of the point, because I think our perspective is from her perspective, you know, in that moment. And he may be starting to realize some things when he, you know, gets the chair for her to, you know, take her across or whatever. But I agree with you that it is not explicit for sure, and it may be too subtle. It may fail to make as much of a point as it wants to make, because it layers it, you know.
I think to that point, there's a version of this movie that I would have loved if they had really just, if they had had their Zootopia moment, because Zootopia is the obvious comparison to this. Phil's already mentioned it in the chat. That's also a world, like kind of where the city is built around the creatures that live in it. It's got like the allegory, you know, in terms of like racism and bigotry and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Zootopia has like a third act moment that like where everything just kind of hits, like the emotion of it and the sort of like surprise kind of message to it. This movie, I don't know, I feel like it was a little bit softer on it. And that could also be a thing where maybe I just didn't connect with the immigrant story as deeply in terms of like taking it. Because I, you know, my parents weren't, you know, quite as like demanding of my future or anything. They're really cool about that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I do think that there's something going on with Pixar and Disney movies where they seem to just all be about like kids doing what their parents don't want them to do. Seriously, Turning Red and Strange World and Encanto.
You get a bunch of full-time artists.
Yes, exactly. Thank
to
you.
Tell a story.
That's like all I can think about, where I'm just like, I know the person who's like writing the script and just being like, I'll show you, Dad. Like, it's that kind of
thing. That's right. I'll tell my story. Yeah. Yeah. It's going to happen.
That's actually a really good segue into my big negative for this
movie. Go for it.
And
yeah, what is it?
I have one negative for this movie. I think that only Ember is given the opportunity to grow as a character. Yeah. And that is my big negative for this movie, is that I think that there were so many moments where Wade could have, you know, changed or noticed something about himself. Mm-hmm. It's very one-sided. And one of the things with relationships is compromise, you know? And I think that throughout this entire movie, we see moments where Ember is compromising over and over again. I don't think I can remember a single time where I saw Wade either.
Well,
grow
I mean, there is
character.
The ending, but
yeah.
there's the ultimate compromise. But
in terms
yes,
of the courtship,
yeah, I understand what
you're
saying. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. That I guess that's what the courtship. That's a really good way of putting it. Is that he is a very well-adjusted person. He is, you know, very in tune with his emotions and everything like that. He seems to be mentally a very healthy person, but at the same time, that doesn't mean that he is the perfect. It kind of reminded me of those old classic Disney films like Sleeping Beauty or Cinderella, where the man is perfect and he just comes in and he saves the woman, you know. And at moments, I kind of got that feeling in this, whereas like, is Wade not going to be, you know, I know he's not a human, but is he going to be a perfect man, you know, where he just gets everything? But like you said, Aaron, there is at that moment at the very end where he does grow as a character. I just think that there could have been many, many more moments throughout the film where we see his character change.
I agree with you. I do think the film feels its limited scope in some ways, and I think that is definitely one of them. Where it is, the only other character I remember having any sort of emotion for was the father, and I think there's that was the patented catch me off guard emotional moment in this movie, was dealing with the father. And I'm like, oh, all of a sudden I'm crying. Thanks, Pixar.
But you got me again. You got me with the short and you got me with the ending.
So, I do like how much they're able to do with so few characters. You know, they aren't bouncing around a huge cast. They do focus on the emotional beats that you want. But I guess that's why it's so notable to me that, yeah, agreed. I think that the father character and the daughter character get so much pathos to them. But, you know, there's actually like a moment in the movie that where it was hitting me, where I was like, I see the movie is telling me why Ember would fall for Wade, because his go with the flow attitude seems to like cool her down and everything like that. And it tries to say that like the thing that she or that he sees in her is that basically she is like bright and sort of like she's like a creative energy, I guess, or like the fire of her is exciting to me. I thought
she inspires him.
To me, that was like, I don't know. It wasn't balanced. Like, I think like the motivation she had for him made way more sense. It was, I don't know. To me, what he saw in her felt almost superficial. Because like you don't get a lot of moments where he gets annoyed with her, because that's part of like what grows the chemistry for her with him, is at first she's like annoyed by him, but she starts to come to realize that she wants a person like that in her life. His version is, yeah, he likes her right away. You know, it's like love at first bright.
I'm going to say something that I'm not sure I believe. I'm just saying it for discussion purposes. But is this kind of what we've been asking movies to do, though, is to treat the male character in the romance as the, you know, just kind of piece and really give the agency and the story and everything to the female character?
Not me.
You know what I mean? Like, No, John's like, not I.
Never.
No, I think I totally agree with you. I think the better story involves two people who are growing towards something. But I will say the balance, there have been many, many romantic stories, rom-coms, whatever, through the years, where it was all about the man's story and his growth, and the woman just was there as, you know, something on the page, you know, not given a lot of those kind of things. But yes, I think it is best.
Yeah, like a good example, right, is, you know, the first thing I thought of was Everything Everywhere All at Once. Where the central romance, right, between, in that case, two people who were, you've been married for a long time. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's that movie is so much about how really, like, the agency between the two characters, Michelle Yeoh and Ke Huy Quan, like, there's right. a reason they both got nominated. You know, and I do think yes. that's the romance that hits.
That's the better version of this. Absolutely. I
feel
agree,
bad for comparing this yeah. Pixar movie meant for 12-year-olds. You didn't have the same multiversal madness as Everything Everywhere All at Once Best Picture winner. Well,
let me talk about this, because this is one of my negatives. You say made for 12-year-olds.
I don't think it is.
I don't
it's
know.
Gonna go over their heads.
I have this sometimes with Pixar movies, but I had it a lot with this one, where I'd be watching it going, are the kids in this theater enjoying this at all? Like, I guess they're looking at funny water creatures and you know, fire creatures, and there's the occasional pratfall, but not
that
really
funny.
Much in this one. It's not that, especially on a child funny level, it's not that funny of a movie. Is this more of Pixar's adult film, so to speak?
Reminds me of like Inside Out.
Not the kind that the audience is thinking of, but yes, it is.
Inside Out's the better version of that.
I don't know.
It?
There was some hardcore pruning. There was some hardcore pruning in this. They did not turn that camera away.
There was there's a joke at the very end of this movie that I thought, wow, there are kids in this theater. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
I forget the phrase, like,
but it was the father saying,
I remember. Yeah,
it starts with Hanky, and then
yes, yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, but I'm like, wow.
I am kind of surprised too, considering how much backlash Turning Red got, right, for just like one or two mm-hmm, scenes, sure. And you know, so many people were just like, I can't show my kids this, you know, and it does make me kind of wonder, you know, if they're going to be like more sensitive about that, which I would find unfortunate, because come on, kids, like, that's nothing for compared to what they hear. You know, I say not as a father, but as an uncle of 9 children.
Yes.
But no, Aaron, I totally agree with you. I think that this is definitely one of the more, if not, you know, emotionally mature, I think that you have to be a little bit more intellectually mature to understand a lot of what this movie's trying to say.
And yet what it's trying to say, I think, can be understood on a, pardon the pun, elemental level. Like, I do think there is, you know, what we're seeing about these ideas of discrimination and looking at how we're different from people instead of seeing how we can, you know, unite with people, like that's going to sink in one way or another. But yeah, it is. It didn't seem like a kid's movie to me while watching it.
No.
Do you guys have one last thing?
No post-credit scene.
John?
I'm bummed out, because, you know, I had a feeling I wouldn't like this, because I didn't watch any of the teasers or trailers, but I was seeing billboards for this everywhere. You know, living in, you know, the Bay Area, right? Like, Pixar movies tend to play pretty well out here, and Emeryville is like right there. And I'm just, you know, I wanted to be surprised. That's the thing. Like, not a lot in this movie surprised me and really took me off guard, but that's usually something that I can count on Pixar for, even in movies that I don't think that are super great from them. Like, Finding Dory, though, sneaks up on you, like, in terms of like what the message ends up being. I think this movie, you know, I don't want people to think that it's bad, because I'm a bit of a downer on it. I think I just have such a unreasonably high standard for what I want out of a Pixar movie that I kind of just, I graded on a pretty unfair curve to some extent. And again, it has all the ingredients for just like a killer Pixar movie. I think that they have the world building there. It just feels like they weren't. It's like they're missing a couple of steps, and it does make me kind of wonder what's going on with the creative leadership at Pixar, because it's the same kind of thing with Lightyear. It's just like they don't seem to have that same sort of like, if it's not right, it's not right, that they used to have. And I don't know what's causing that. If it's a financial thing, because it's not like they can just cancel a movie like Newt, like they used to, you know. It just seems right. like more and more right. they're just like, we're just going to keep going forward with this, even if it's not working. We're not going to like go through all the what happened with The Good Dinosaur again, where we basically changed the whole movie. I don't know how I fully stand with that, because sometimes it results in the movie being terrific. You know, Toy Story 2 was made so quickly, and it kind of thrived a little bit on the chaos of that. But yeah, something's going on. My very, very last thing, I think that a lot of this might stem down to the Pixar brain trust, like that central like group of people. I think some of them need to maybe step aside a bit more and really start to elevate the newer voices at the studio. And I know a lot of people disagree, because they'll be like, I love Elemental. What are you talking about? But for me, like the ones that have stuck out have been Luca and Turning Red, quite honestly. And those have been movies where, you know, the people behind them, I know they've been with Pixar for a while, but they're weirdos. And that's where I gravitate. So, yeah.
Sure. I think I'll make this my one last thing. I think it's clear from watching this for me. I will take the opposite perspective as you while agreeing with what you're saying. I do agree that there seems to be that final level of, is the story perfect? Then let's get it perfect. That's not happening with Lightyear and with this. But I think the other opposite side of that is there is a lot of the Pixar ethos that continues to remain solid. And I like that. I like the idea of, casting for story first, like I talked about before. I like the idea that they are still doing original movies when they could just go back to the sequel, you know, well, every single time. And get locked in, you know, doing the seventh Shrek movie or whatever it might be.
I'm so happy I saw this on a big screen to that point, not just Disney Plus.
Yeah. Yeah. So like there are parts of the Pixar experience that I think are alive and well, but I am with you in that there also is that final level of, just solidness, to the story that is missing here. Even though, again, I enjoyed it. I loved it. That is Elemental. You can check that out now in theaters. All right, let's do a best ever challenge, guys. But before let's we do, I do want to thank our Sift Pop members. Thank you so much for supporting at Patreon. Means the world to us. We do a little pre-show for you guys when we record. And Andrew is leading those off. We talked about a few things on this one, including some Guillermo del Toro talk, some talk about Batman the Brave and the Bold, as well as answering one of your questions. If you have questions and you are a SIFPOP member, you can send those to Andrew@SIFPOP.com. And if you want to be a member, just go to Patreon, patreon.com/SIFPOP. If nothing else, you can kind of check out what it's all about, see what the members-only podcast looks like, all that kind of fun stuff. So, again, check that out, patreon.com/SIFPOP, and we appreciate you for even checking it out. All right, best ever challenge, best ever actor comeback movies. We will go from number 5 to number 1. If you hear a choice on somebody's list lower than you have it, we can
trump.
We can trump it. So, let's start. I'll start on this one at number 5. And again, this is returning to a role after at least 10 years not being in that role. So there we go. My number 5, I think I'm the only one that will have this, is Dick Van Dyke coming back for Mary Poppins Returns.
I thought you were going to have this at your number 1.
I genuinely forgot.
The fact that it was Dick Van Dyke.
I forgot he was in it, quite honestly.
Yeah. I think this is a really good movie. I would not have put it on my list if I didn't. I'm a big Mary Poppins fan. I'm a huge Dick Van Dyke fan. And to watch him in his 90s just continue to do the things that he does, including being on The Masked Singer this last year.
How did he do that?
It's just wild. May we all have that much energy.
It's 95, 96.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. But anyways, Mary Poppins Returns is a good movie. That is my number 5. John, why don't you go next?
I'm going to say Ian McDiarmid. who came back to the Star Wars movies, and I just put the prequel trilogy to be accurate, but really like seeing his character start to flourish in Revenge of the Sith. But yeah, in between Return of the Jedi and then, of course, Phantom Menace, like there is, and look, I knew I had to pick one Star Wars character. How could I not? I'm a millennial. But of all of them, the one that I just think is just the most like fun in just when you're looking at the prequels and then coming back to the future trilogy and everything, Ian McDiarmid, who does come back to, I could have also said Rise of Skywalker, but that would have been a bad idea. I would have been talking about a bad movie. I do think the prequel trilogy has good stuff in it, and McDiarmid is far and away my favorite thing about those, like close to like, I think Ewan McGregor as well. But yeah, McDiarmid, I mean, he's the Emperor. He's the Dark Lord of the Sith. He's my boy.
He is.
There you go. All right, Andrew, what is your number five?
I'm going to go with Albert Brooks and Finding Dory.
Is there 10 years between Nemo and Dory?
There is, yeah. 13.
I think there was.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good call.
It's wild,
call.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is nowhere near as good as the first movie. I'll just say that. I don't want to, you know, give people that impression. But there are moments of magic in this movie. That I think that it does recapture from the first one. Finding Nemo is my favorite Pixar movie. It's without a doubt, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. So there really wasn't much of a chance for it to, it would have been a high bar for it to meet the sequel, but it's still a really good movie. Idris Elba as the seal screaming off gets me every time.
Nice.
Every time.
Good choice. Good choice. My number four might get trumped. I'm not sure. I'm going with Paul Newman as Eddie Felsen in The Color of Money. Ooh. Are you giving me the nod for the button?
No, I'm giving you a nod for good. Oh, okay. It was one of my honorable mentions.
Yeah, Color of Money is really good. It kind of blows my mind that Scorsese directed this. Like every time I'm like, wait, this is a Martin Scorsese movie. I don't think of it as a Scorsese movie. It's one of those weird things. But it's really good. I think it's maybe where Tom Cruise is really starting to polish the edges like on his shtick, and so he really works in this movie really, really well. He's really figuring it out. And Paul Newman's Paul Newman, in case you didn't know. And the pool stuff is really fun and interesting. I highly recommend The Color of Money. Check that one out. That is my number four. John, what's your number four?
My number four is Willem Dafoe in Spider-Man No Way Home. And this was tough because it was between him and Alfred Molina. I went with Dafoe because I've seen No Way Home twice, and what he does with the Goblin character is just like, that's a character that didn't even need a bookend because, you know, everything was kind of said and done with that trilogy. And yet Dafoe showed up, did not phone it in, and found just like new ground for the character, in a way that, the thing that impresses me the most about it is that after so many Spider-Man movies and with so much other stuff in Spider-Man No Way Home, he still stands out. He's still like full on with that character and both sides of it, you know, because so much of the movie he is like the good, you know, Norman Osborn, whatever that means. And that's what makes, of course, his dark descent even darker. It was Dafoe for me. And I thought about Andrew Garfield, but I was like, it hadn't been 10 years between Amazing Spider-Man 2. If I couldn't have said him.
If I would have thought of it, it would have been on my list. It would have been pretty near the top. If you think of the old Sam Raimi ones, there was a level of campiness to them that he shakes off for this role, but it still feels like the same character, which is very difficult to do. Good pick.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, what is your number four?
I'm going to go with Jeff Bridges and Tron Legacy. There we go.
But not for long. It is my number three. So we'll talk about it now. Nice. I love Tron Legacy unabashedly. So I think it is. It's okay, I have to be careful with my declaratives, but I feel like it's so clearly better than the original Tron. Like, I go back and I watch the original Tron, and I'm like, man, what a fun concept. This movie is terrible. And I watch this one, and I'm like, this is that concept in a more interesting way for me. And yes, young Jeff Bridges is a little shaky on the CG front. We weren't quite there yet, but it's not bad. What'd you say, Andrew?
When did this movie come out? 2011, 2012, somewhere around there?
It was 13 years ago or whatever.
Still, for the time, it still holds up.
And they're also in a computer. I gave it a pass when I saw it.
That's fair. Yeah. I'm down with that. I'm down with that explanation. Talk about it, Andrew. What are some of the reasons you had it on your list?
Hands down, for me personally, the best soundtrack of any movie ever made. Good. Hands down.
Yeah.
I mean, I've loved Daft Punk ever since I was a little kid. To see them score a movie and for that movie to be the sequel to Tron is like, I don't think they could have got anybody better. Like, I really
Seems perfect. Yeah.
I've rewatched the movie. Yeah.
But no, the visuals, it's
perfect. I've rewatched the movie only like once, but I do come back to the trailer pretty often because it's such a good trailer.
Fun. All right. So that's my number three. John, what's your number three?
My number three is Keanu Reeves and The Matrix Resurrections. A movie that I only continue to love more and more. When I first saw this, I was like, what am I watching? What? No. Come on. Because I genuinely had no idea how to react. And then I saw it again and I was like, I love this. This is brilliant. And a lot of it has to do with Keanu Reeves and, of course, Carrie-Anne Moss as Trinity. Like, they are just a force in this. If I could have said two people, I was considering putting Carrie-Anne Moss on the list as well. Keanu Reeves, man. I mean, when he gets into the Neo role and balances it with like that larger than life persona he's cultivated kind of during the John Wick years, but also like just that kind of like, he has that goofiness that he has in a movie like Always Be My Maybe. And he kind of like adds it to The Matrix. And the fact that he can just do that and it doesn't, not only does it not suck, it fits and it's brilliant and it adds to the story and the heart of it and the romance of it. I just, I was so happy. And that was a movie I expected to despise because I was like, they're not going to be able to do this. Like, I don't trust them. But I was happily wrong.
Okay, moving on. Let's see. Number three for you, Andrew.
Harrison Ford in The Force Awakens. Ooh, come on, Aaron.
I thought of that one. It's my first honorable mention. I like The Force Awakens a lot. I had wished they hadn't put the Luke cameo right at the end of The Force Awakens, because then I could have said The Last Jedi. And that would have been a for sure one on my list. But Force Awakens is great. It is my first honorable mention. So yeah, talk about it.
Yeah, it's the only film of the new trilogy that I actually like.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people say, well, it's just A New Hope made again. I'm like, well, New Hope is one of the best movies ever made, so how's that a bad thing? I think that the introduction of Kylo Ren is such a fascinating character, like a character, a villain who I did not expect in the Star Wars franchise, because he's so damaged and conflicted by who he wants to be. And that, if there's one thing I can say that I love about Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, is that they continued with that conflict within him, to where I don't know, even by the end of the third movie with his character and stuff, like, which way is he going to go? You know, is he going to, you know, be with the dark side? Is he going to be a Sith? Or is he going to be a Rise of Skywalker? Is he going to give up the way of the dark side and become Jedi again? So that's my big takeaway from this new franchise, is I think Adam Driver just slayed it as Kylo Ren.
Yeah. All right, on to our number twos. This is Mike Trump. I'm going with Tom Cruise in Top Gun Maverick as my number two.
Can't even think of it.
I'm still in awe of this movie. It's yeah. just such a fun, well-made movie. I had such a great time with it. It's in at my number two. So there you go.
It would be my number one if I'd have thought of it, but
it's in my honorable mentions.
Whoops.
Yeah. John, what's your number two?
My number two is Harrison Ford, but not for The Force Awakens, but for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. I genuinely was considering, like, oh, I'll probably do Blade Runner 2049. I had that on the list as my number two. And then I saw Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny yesterday. And I changed it because I was like, oh my God, because I wasn't expecting much. I mean, I really like the Indiana Jones trilogy. They don't hit me as hard as I think a lot of other people. I love the movies, don't get me wrong. But I don't think I'm like as obsessed with Indiana Jones as other people my age, I guess. But Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is probably a big reason for that. That was the first one I ever saw on the big screen. You know, like I've gone to like drive-ins and stuff and watched Temple of Doom, you know, and had fun doing that. But Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, I was just like, oh, this sucks. Like, I don't, no, thank you. And then I saw Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, and I just seeing Harrison Ford get back into that hat and just like come back to this character and just, you know, he's not Harrison Ford. I'll tell you that much. He's just
nice.
He's using his age as a weapon. In a way that's just so fascinating, and he does it so well. And I also thought of Force Awakens too, because I think there's a lot of that too in Force Awakens. I agree with Andrew a lot, actually, in terms of that. But no, for me, Dial of Destiny is just like quintessential, like Silver Age Harrison Ford, whatever you want to call it.
Well, that is exciting to hear. That is exciting to hear. We will see it here shortly and review it shortly. I'm excited. More excited now that you said that. All right, Andrew, what is your number two?
Gonna go with Bruce Willis and Split.
As soon as somebody mentioned that,
I was like, okay, that's coming up later in the pre-show.
Yeah, whenever you mentioned it earlier, I'm like, ooh, you just wait. Yeah. Wow. I did not. Wow for the reveal. Yes. Mm-hmm. Split's a good movie. Split is a very good movie. I think that what's his name?
Split is a decent movie that becomes a great movie in the last 10 minutes when you realize what you realize and how it changes the rest of the movie. It's this weird thing. I've never had an experience like this before where the last moments of the movie wash over the rest of the movie and make it even better. Like
I didn't even like the movie, but I still like the last part.
Oh, really? Maybe I'm just on an island.
No, I know a lot of people. I remember we were split on Split. I'll tell you that much. Mm-hmm. Like there were people who were telling me, John, what's wrong with you? This movie's so good. And yeah.
Yeah.
I think McAvoy he gives one of the best performances. I can't even imagine how difficult it would be to do this performance. Because, yeah, there's times where he gets, you know, downtime in between takes that he can prepare for, you know, a different character. Mm-hmm. But there are moments in this movie where you see him transform from one character to another. And that is incredibly impressive. And, of course, this is like one of the first times I was introduced to Anya Taylor-Joy, who has become a staple in Hollywood now. Yeah, super good. I think the first thing I saw her in was The Witch, and I think this was the second thing I saw her in. So she immediately, in my mind, became, oh, she's going to be the new Scream Queen, you know? But no, yeah.
She's Queen's Gambit.
A great actress.
Yeah, don't need the Scream.
Scream Queen's Gambit.
All right, I think we're on to our number ones then. You both had your Harrison Ford, so I'm going to have mine. my number one is Harrison Ford in Blade Runner 2049.
That's another one if I would have thought of it.
What a great movie. Just keeps getting better and better in my estimation. It's the movie, every time I think of it or mention it, I'm like, do I have time right now to go watch it? Like, it's so amazing. Blade Runner 2049, I think is great and worth mentioning in this conversation for sure.
Oh, there are a few movies I tell people that's like, oh, perfect movie doesn't exist. And then I'm like, well, hold on.
John, what is your number one?
My number one, very fitting. Everyone's gonna be like, yeah, okay, Bart, say the line. Tom Hanks and Toy Story 3, go ahead. Yes, good. Of course. I mean, Toy Story 3, which came, 11 years after Toy Story 2.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all about the character really coming back. Long? Right? Say again?
Was it really that long? Yeah, because between 2 and 3?
Toy Story 2 came out in 1999. Toy Story 3 came out in 2010. And I mean, you feel it, right? Because in the movie's time, we're really seeing Tom Hanks go from with the character. We're seeing Woody kind of be there when Andy is 5-6 years old, all the way up to when he's 18. And just what Hanks is able to bring to that performance to get across that the tragedy, the grief of that. But he's also a cowboy doll, so he has to have that same kind of level of just, you know, the shepherd of all these other people. And there was just something to seeing that on the big screen again, as somebody who one of my first movies in the movie theater was Toy Story. That movie came out when I was 5 years old. Actually, no, when I was 4. And so I watched that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, right. Totally, yeah, me yeah, too. We all, yeah. How do you do, fellow kids?
All us 5 year olds went to see Toy Story. I remember that.
Yeah, we smoked cigarettes after. But right. Seeing that and then seeing Toy Story 2 on the big screen and then seeing Toy Story 3 on the big screen, I mean, that is just a 90s kid trifecta right there. So that's it for me.
Good call. Totally forgot that was 11 years between them, or it would have made my list as well. Yeah, nice one. Andrew, what is your number one? Finish this off.
2009 film starring, well, I shouldn't say starring, cameoing Leonard Nimoy. I'm going to go with Star Trek.
That's a good one.
Nice. Definitely my honorable mentions.
Yeah. I think the last time he played Spock was in Star Trek VI, which came out in 1991. Mm-hmm. It'd been a hot minute, and this movie's so good. If you want to talk about perfect casting for a movie, mm-hmm. this movie is perfect cast to get the entire crew. It's just epic. I love it. I think that Eric Bana as the villain, he does a great job. There's not a lot to hate about this movie. I mean, it's pretty much a home run.
Yeah, so I agree.
One, if I would have thought of all those other movies, though, that you guys had mentioned.
It's definitely my honorable mentions. I think, like you said, the casting carries this movie through, but the movie itself is really good as well. So yeah, Star
Trek. Arguably,
we
wouldn't have Force Awakens if it wasn't for Star Trek. So
no, it's very, very fair point. A couple honorable mentions I had, and then you guys can chime in if you have any as well. I wanted to mention 21 Jump Street, which is a weird one because the role was actually on television he came back for that movie.
Maybe Johnny Depp made a movie, a 21 Jump Street back in the day. Who knows?
Yeah, possibly. And then I wanted to mention Scream 22 as well, that I do enjoy, and some of the characters coming back for that. So what else did you guys have?
Mentioned all mine.
Okay. I did.
John, did you have any others you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I did. I did mention I had Tom Cruise, Top Gun Maverick, and Carrie Ann Moss, of course, Matrix, which I think Matrix Resurrection is Aaron's favorite movie.
Yes, clearly.
Also, I was going to say Tyrese, Fast Five. I think that was 10 years between Too Fast, Too Furious and coming back in. That was 2011 for Fast Five. I want to say Mark Hamill, from Last Jedi. I know Force Awakens is where he shows up, but I would wrap that into Last Jedi for sure, because I don't care what anybody says. I think that what Hamill did with that character, what Rian Johnson did with that character, I thought was really great. I will fight
I agree
every
you.
Day about that.
You will fight Mark Hamill himself on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know. Even he said it. I think
he was not a fan.
I love Mark Hamill so much, though. He's just such a passionate, caring mm-hmm. person, and he's mm-hmm. so just willing to talk to the fans like that, where they're at. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool stuff. There you go. There is our best ever challenge for this week. We'll finish it off with our buried treasure, guys. What's that one thing in any area of pop culture you want to make sure people know about it? John, you're our guest, so you will go last. Andrew, why don't you kick us off?
Well, the show's kicking my day into a little tumble, because right now is the Mid-Atlantic Open for the NXL paintball tournament, which I have been watching on TV. If you're wondering why I'm wearing this getup, this is my jersey from when I used to play on a team and tour around the U.S. It's going to be going on today, actually yesterday, all the way through Sunday. Many of the amazing teams that I've been fans of for decades are still playing, like Dynasty, the Moscow Red Legion, who is pictured right there if you're watching the YouTube video, Then there's like Iron Man. If you've never watched Tournament Paintball, it's not like anything you probably expect. A lot of people would expect, you know, like playing in the woods, you know, with like a bunch of camo on and stuff like that. No, it's a very competitive, highly skilled game where the athletes, and they are athletes, are in top physical condition. Like they run the 40 and under, like what a running back does. It's really impressive to see these people. What do you call it? Competence porn? Like when somebody's mm-hmm. really good at their craft. That's what this is. Like people who are really good at their craft. So if you'd like to watch it, I highly recommend it. You can go on YouTube and just, if you type in Go Sports, all one word, then you can watch it. They're doing live shows all day through Sunday.
Nice. My buried treasure is, by the time, if you're watching this live, it'll be about a week, but by the time you're hearing this, it'll just be a couple days. Secret Invasion is dropping here soon, and I have seen the first couple episodes, and wow, this is a little bit of a, John, I don't know if you got screeners or checked this out at all, but this is a little bit of a darker turn, in my opinion, and it kind of works. It's kind of a good spy show. I really enjoyed the first couple episodes, so I wanted to let people know about it.
Yeah, I have the screeners, but I haven't.
Compare it to. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say I haven't started it yet. I kind of heard bad things, but yeah. Compared it to what, though?
Well, it would not be unlike me to love something that many people don't. So it wouldn't surprise me if people are saying bad things. But I didn't have a lot of expectations going into it other than I like Sam Jackson. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know that I was prepared for the type of show it was going to be and for that to resonate with me in the way it did. So, yeah.
I've heard people compare it to a Winter Soldier if it was darker. Like there's mm-hmm, a spy sure. element to it, but there's also a level
that.
Of seriousness that you don't really see in Marvel that much.
I just think that they understand that the idea of the Skrulls really plays well into double agents, triple agents, you know, yeah. like it just plays really well into that kind of, like Spycraft Forever has been about masks in, I mean, look at the Mission Impossible movies mm-hmm. and, the, you know, turning into other people. They're basically Skrulls in the Mission Impossible movies with what those masks yeah. can do. And there's a reason that works because, you know, it plays into Spycraft and all those kind of things. And so with Skrulls, it's just this next level of that kind of thing. I think it works really well.
How far we've come from the days of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when it was such a big deal that Sam Jackson was in a scene of a TV show connected uh-huh. to Marvel, and now yeah, it's right. like, you know, an right. entire Marvel show with him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Rest in peace, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That is on Disney Plus if you want to check it out. John, what is your buried treasure?
Mine is like you all know me. You all know I'm going to show up with an anime. It's anime time with John. And I've been watching a lot of anime this season.
I believe you mean anime.
Anime, anemic, whatever you want.
Anime.
I love anime. I do an anime podcast now. Over the last few months, I've been doing it. And I've been watching a lot of the new ones this season. And it was hard to pick just one. I decided not to pick one of the slice of life rom-coms. And instead go with Mashle, Magic and Muscles. And so let me try to describe this to you guys. So this is basically if Harry Potter was an anime and a parody of Harry Potter. For example, this show's version of Gryffindor, they're burnouts, delinquents, losers. And not only is there like a Slytherin, they're literally trying to kill them constantly. It is very, very action heavy. It's a shonen, but it's playing with shonen tropes. It's also sort of playing with like how ridiculous and nonsensical Harry Potter is. The main character cannot use magic. So there it's a little bit similar to other anime that have done that concept. What if everybody in the world had magic powers but one person didn't? It's that kind of story.
My Hero Academia.
It's like My Hero Academia. It's like Black Clover in that way. But what they do with it is so unique. It's actually kind of what I always wanted from My Hero Academia, quite honestly, which was the first, I think, buried treasure I ever did with you all. And no, this it's just one season. It's about to finish up, and I love it so much. It's just hilarious. It also has one of the best opening intro songs of any anime I've seen all year. I listen to it while I go like on a run. It's such a jam. So yeah, if you like anime, or if you're kind of like, hey, you know, I want to kick off with something, I like DBZ and Naruto back in the day. This is one of the like newer ones that's gonna get your blood pumping.
Okay.
Very nice. It looks like it's available for purchase on Apple TV.
Easiest is Crunchyroll.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Crunchyroll is the streaming service I use the most. If I had to pick one, it would be that one.
All right. Well, there you go. That is Crunchyroll. If you want to check out Mashal, Magic, and Muscles, Secret Invasion is on Disney Plus here soon. And was it Mid XL Paintball?
NXL, the Mid Atlantic Tournament.
Got that completely wrong. NXL, the Mid-Atlantic Tournament, which is paintballing. Let's go paintballing. That is, if you search for Go Sports on YouTube, you should find the channel that has all that stuff if you want to check it out. Well, we did it, guys. We managed to do a podcast.
Yeah, we
congratulations.
Did.
Just barely. Just right to the last drop. Thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Well, thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
And much love to John Negroni for coming and hanging out with us again. John, tell people where to go.
Look, I'm on Twitter, at John Negroni. And I have my little pop culture site where I'm the film editor. So you can find my film reviews and film reviews that I edit over on inbetweendrafts.com. That's where I'm at these days. And so that's where you can find my review of Elemental. It's where you can find the review of The Flash that I didn't write, but one of our writers did. And we're always looking for new writers. So you can write for In Between Drafts if you want. Hit us up and I will be sure to be the kind of editor who hopefully doesn't make you cry.
he hopes to be the kind of editor that doesn't say butterfly, windshield wiper, half a butterfly.
No, stop, Aaron, please. Aaron.
Thank you to our Sif Pop members as well for making Sif Pop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month. You can check out all the details at patreon.com/sifpop. Also, lots of ways to connect with the podcast. Leave a comment or a rating or a review. You can do that wherever you listen, whether it's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever. You can also email us if you want to, feedback@siftpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like it too, so let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than me not turning into a water person a half dozen times during a Pixar movie. We will be back in a couple weeks. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and we'll talk Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, as well as Asteroid City. So we will see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.